This is Great FM.
The need for diversity and inclusion at the workplace is not a new one, but the evolution of those concepts from mere mandates to a cultural shift has been a fast-growing and relatively novel one. Welcome everyone, Ahalya here on another edition of Great FM, Great HR's official podcast series. And today we're going to be spotlighting the relationship between HR teams and the DEI priority. Gone are the days of namesake initiatives and benefits, organizations that aim to truly diversify their teams from within, making the diversity and inclusion need an all-permeating occurrence, are the ones that actually attract fresh talent in droves, disrupt the market, and essentially survive and thrive. For a priority this close to the heart of an organization, it only then becomes obvious that HR makes for a key player in making this a reality. So in today's podcast, we're going to be in conversation with Renu Bora, Chief People Officer for India, DB Schenker. She has won the second Innovative Best Practices Award 2019 for Women at Workplace, organized by the UN Global Compact Network India, or UNGCNI, in the category of private and public sector. Also been recognized as part of ET Best Organizations for Women 2022 for the second consecutive year, and has been listed in Asia's 100 Power Leaders in HR 2022. She's joining us in conversation today to discuss the role of HR in creating a diverse and inclusive culture, what it takes, the vision that could make such a change possible, and what this shift in culture could mean for an organization. Let's dive in. Hi, Renu. Welcome.
Thank you, Ahalya, for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. So let's dive in, Renu. The first question that I'd actually like to touch upon, you know, according to a recent PwC survey on breaking down the barriers to diversity, more than 80% of millennials believe that an employer's policy on diversity, equality, and inclusion actually plays an important role when they're deciding whether to work for them. This obviously points to a need for relevant employer branding. So does employer branding need to be a key priority for HR teams in the context of DE&I?
It's a very good question. And the straight answer is yes. But obviously, how do we ensure that this is a priority and it is, you know, it flows down from the recruiter to the hiring manager, the HR, and to onboarding. So yes, your employer brand already exists. You may acknowledge it or you may not. It is there. The question is it in line with your aspired EVP? So it's important for organization to consciously work on the EVP, the employer value proposition, and communicate it to all employees internally and to the recruiters and to the hiring managers to ensure that it becomes a priority for HR. And we ensure that the employer brand speaks through. One of the big ways is to also getting certification from relevant agencies like, say, Great Place to Work or Top Employer. This adds value, not because of the certification, but because it sets a benchmark. Mm-hmm. And people can relate to it. At the same time, I think the important writer here is that you cannot fake it. Mm-hmm. As new candidates have access to Glassdoor and to Indeed, you know, and similar channels. Yeah. So, yeah, employer branding is a means to reinvent your talent acquisition for the better. And it is a priority for HR and for recruiting folks.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're listening to Great FM.
You know, when researching the need for this culture shift almost that we've been witnessing over the past couple of years, I came across a Forbes article speaking about the ways to make an organization more diverse, right? And there it cites a very interesting difference between a culture add and a culture fit, because it says that the former is more valuable in today's time because it actually adds new dimension to the organization and to your team, rather than the second, which is the culture fit, which would, you know, just celebrate one's ability to fit in and conform. So how does this play into HR's process of recruitment and hiring when looking for fresh talent?
Yeah, I think I don't see it as, you know, this versus that or a culture fit versus culture add.
Okay.
I see it as a journey. So culture fit was being discussed maybe in the last two decades because culture became such an important thing during hiring. And we said that, okay, technical qualification, technical competence, everything is important, but a culture fit is so important for effective hiring. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I agree that culture add is more valuable in today's context than culture fit. It's the same thing as when we say that, you know, just obeying best practices will only make us average. Doing things the way everyone does is a safe path to obsolescence. So change right. the goal, change the tactics, change the strategy. Therefore, for recruiters and hiring managers and HR, we have to focus on culture add than just to look for culture fit. Mm-hmm. And this will ensure diversity. And we know that diversity can be enhanced in a big way during hiring, because that is your entry point. That is the point where you can change or add value to the talent pool. Right. In organizations where there's no attrition, how do they increase diversity? It's again a big issue that how do they focus on diversity of thought and bringing change from within? Mm-hmm. But coming back, in most of the organization, attrition is a reality. And hiring brings a very good opportunity for building culture add or diversity. And I again repeat the same thing that, you know, you may add to diversity, mm-hmm. but then diversity has to be supported. And the culture add has to be aligned to the practices around people, which means that a mindset change of the managers and accordingly an alignment in the performance management that we have, mm-hmm. Making the work practices more inclusive and more flexible. And there is, and this is the way I think we can focus more on culture add, because there is a business proposition to adding diversity.
Thank you. Okay. All right. I also love that idea that recruitment and hiring is the entry point, which is why it can be enhanced to actually address the DEI priority. That's awesome.
This is Great FM.
As a takeaway from that aspect, are there any specific initiatives in your experience that one can add to make that process more tuned to DE&I, but also in a non-token way, not just as like, you know, this is a mandate, so we're doing it. In your experience, maybe the top three hygiene processes that people need to have in their hiring and recruitment processes.
Thanks, Ahalya. I think you have, you know, hit the nail by saying that how do we make DEI more in a non-token way? Because at times it becomes very, it becomes tokenism. Mm-hmm. So top three things I would say, first is that you attract diversity. Okay. You know, at times, you know, HR team is just running around as a mandate number to increase diversity and they think that the onus is on their shoulders. Mm-hmm. But rather, we can turn it around. We can say, let's attract diversity, which means go for a wide search. Bring candidates with diverse background, mm-hmm. change your job description, which can be very narrowed down to say in number of years of experience. I have seen job descriptions saying that we are looking for 8 to 10 years experience. Why are you cutting down on 10? Why are you not thinking of age diversity? So make it broad. And why you are making it say 15 years experience? Maybe somebody with 8 years, some woman candidate who has taken a break but had done a real good, valuable experience and then move back to family or taken a break and so on. Mm-hmm. So don't make your job description experiences very narrowed down. Don't highlight that, you know, only from top institute. Again, that becomes a roadblock to diversity. And job description should focus more on competencies. They should also be attracting a diverse candidate in terms of, if you use the word aggressive at times, it's quite a masculine term.
Right.
So that is one way. I think the first way, which I can say, to attract diverse talent. Second one is that work backward, in the sense that you work on downstream and upstream activities to assimilate diversity, which means as an organization, you can sign up with, there are firms, there are agencies which have, which work with differently abled people. They have a very good pool with them and you can tap those talent. They're sitting mm-hmm. with them. So sign up with those agencies, work with these specialized agencies, map the roles for, particularly when you are focusing on hiring differently abled people. Mm-hmm. And downstream, you align your people practices around these. including your R&R practices. And third could be, you know, build a pipeline. So you may not be able to hire people with higher experience. You may not be able to get diverse candidate on that. Right. But then for freshers, I think sky is the limit. So build pipeline, bring more diversity there. Offer internship to diverse candidates. Let them experience your organization.
Right.
So, and internships are at times quite, you know, they are not taxing to the organization. Mm-hmm. At the same time, they can open your organization to diverse workforce. So your managers for 2 or 3 months of internship can also experience people with diversity. The other day, I was talking to a manager who said he has never worked with any homosexual team member. And then he had all vague ideas around homosexuality. But when his manager was a homosexual, a declared homosexual, he found that he was as, you know, equal. And then all those, you know, ideas that, because we at times we latch on identity as if, you know, homosexuality is the only identity of that person. So he right. is this plus that, and so many things which can be common between him and me, mm-hmm. for that matter. So I would say building a talent pipeline by hiring interns, diverse from diverse background,
right.
is a key to bring more diversity in a non-token way.
That is fantastic. So just to sum it up for our listeners, you say to start actually with making sure that you are attracting diverse talent, then to also work with specific agencies that can ensure that talent. And then the third one is to open the doors to internships so that people can actually experience firsthand the diversity at your organization.
Exactly.
You're listening to Great FM.
And, you know, you touched upon this earlier in the conversation, Renu, which is the idea of sustainability when it comes to diversity in the workplace. So once you've, you know, ticked all of the boxes, it always comes to how long is this going to stay, right? And interestingly, so a Gartner article on sustainable diversity in the workplace cites that only 1/3 of employees agree that they have the ability to influence inclusion at their organization. And I think that points to the idea that once you get your foot in the door, it's not always necessary that you will have the same influence, right, going forward. So how do you think HR teams have to work towards making DEI more sustainable? And is it, you know, within their responsibility to do so?
So I would say that, no, it is not their sole responsibility. But yes, they play a very important role. Mm-hmm. in ensuring that DEI is sustainable in the organization, mm-hmm. through building those practices around the organization. So at the time, I keep on hearing that diversity is so easy in India because we are a multi-regional, multi-lingual
right.
Community with, you know, various religions that we have. We have got various belief system, socioeconomic mm-hmm. groups are there. So diversity is so easy in India. But my question is that who are the decision makers in the organization who make decisions on hiring? They are from very select group for reasons of, you know, maybe they got opportunity earlier because they were from economically better environment. Mm-hmm. So I think the first step is first and foremost step to ensure sustainability in DEI would be, how do we build diversity in decision makers?
Okay.
Because decision makers suddenly would say today there's a mandate and they may focus on low-hanging fruit, and tomorrow they will just focus on business and business goals. And they may forget about DEI. So it's important that the decision makers themselves are diverse. And if you don't have decision makers who have diversity, because you may have a leadership team which is very homogeneous, then you include diversity in decision making. So suppose you go for panels of interview,
right?
So where you are hiring for critical position, make a panel interview panel where you have people from diverse group being represented. So this is one way to sustain it. The other would be, like, you know, monitoring DEI, and that is a safe thing that HR can do.
Okay.
That how do we keep on? So we have your DEI goals, but then you have to monitor them through surveys, through capturing voice of internal customers, through informal and formal dipsticks, and using channels like Glassdoor, and ensuring that you present this data to your senior management team, to ensure that the discussion of DEI is never, you know, lost out or ignored.
Yeah, absolutely. That, again, makes perfect sense. And again, you touched upon this previously in the conversation, which is the idea of leadership helming the DE&I shift, right, in some sense. So how can HR create or contribute to creating an environment that holds top management responsible and accountable for the D&I priority, Renu?
There are various ways, Ahilya, but I think let me talk about three ways which is coming to my mind immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
One is to ensure that there is a feedback mechanism.
Okay.
And feedback mechanism may not be just only a Gallup survey or the employee survey that you do. May not be only the Great Place to Work survey to name Great Place to Work. But then you have to have a mix of it. You may have to also include the element of 360-degree feedback for top management. You need to have anonymous feedback surveys as well as direct feedback between peers and their managers. I think we need to institutionalize a practice of managers getting the feedback from their peers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one way to ensure that there is more accountability from management. Second thing is about, you know, setting goals and measuring success. It may appear to be very simple, but I think unless it is your goal, you will lose focus on that.
Right.
And the critical thing is to set goals that are meaningful, measurable, goals which matter, and tying DEI goals into other business goals.
Okay.
And third would be, you know, as simple as choosing an accountability partner. And this can be an external agency.
Okay.
Or it can be your internal buddies or mentors in the organization. So a senior manager, every senior manager can be tied to an accountability partner to ensure that there is a journey and it's tracked. And then there is an evolution.
Okay, wonderful. I love that. Seems like a very innovative solution, actually. An accountability partner. We usually hear about that just in our personal lives. We're trying to like lose weight or something. But the fact that it can be used, used at this level for a priority this serious is awesome. And finally, I'd like to wrap the conversation with your opinion on this, Renu. What are the three most definitive HR trends, according to you, that are going to catalyze this shift in terms of D&I from a mandate to a culture change?
Now, Ahilya, this is a difficult question because there are many trends emerging, and to pick a definitive trend depends upon, you know, where I am sitting. But I'll tell you, we see many trends emerging, but three trends which I can say are quite definitive.
Mm-hmm.
One is a focus on inclusive language. Now, this may appear to be a very fuzzy kind of thing, but this is a trend that, you know, organizations are being very mindful on the language that we use. So if I start my conversation saying, hi guys, how are you? Instead of that, you say, hi folks, or something which is like not very specific to male gender. Using term like chairperson in place of chairman. So inclusive language is very important.
Mm-hmm.
That is a trend, and that is happening not only in the way we are communicating, but the way we are writing, the way we are addressing people, the way we are hiring some manager. Are we just saying, I want him to be aggressive, I want him to bring results? Why is this him? So are we, you know, priming people by just, you know, building a persona around? Or for that matter, HR. Look at the HR team these days. They are so, we only tend to hire more women there. And I think we have to also look into diversity in HR itself. Second one will be the trend that we are seeing. There are many unique programs coming in the organizations, you know, for returning mothers, to ensuring paternity leave is given to men, and making people practices for all genders. So it is not only like women being focused as if women are the one who are supposed to take care of their families, but making men as equal partners. That is the second trend that I am seeing. And third one is hybrid working. Now you may say that hybrid working, is it a new trend? It came from the lockdown of pandemic. But then during the lockdown of pandemic, it came as a solution. But now it has to be, it's high time that we institutionalize it, because hybrid working is one of the acknowledgement of diversity of workforce. People have diverse needs. They have to balance their work life. And I'm seeing a huge, pushback. People are just asking people to come back to work as if there was no learning around work from home.
Right.
Work from home became a bit taxing, but it can be facilitated and regulated.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I still believe that it may not be a solution for all workforce, but if it is a solution for even 50% of the workforce, I think we should go ahead with it, because it will help in diversity, ensuring the diversity is more sustainable in the organization.
Okay, all right. So inclusive language, focus on the hybrid model and how it can actually facilitate diversity. Those sound like very, very valid solutions. Thank you so much for joining us today, Renu, and sharing your insights, your very valuable insights with us. I think we've all taken away something new from this conversation, and that means it was a good conversation.
Thank you, Alia. I think it was a pleasure speaking to you. And yes, the questions were quite insightful, and they also help you to do some kind of reflection whether your organization is following these and what new ideas can germinate now. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure speaking to you.
This is Great FM.